It's time now for Alaska Tracks, an oral history of Alaska people and their way of life, celebrating the rich heritage, wild landscapes, and deeply rooted stories of Alaska past. Alaska Tracks, brought to you by Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware, Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding Extreme North Trailers, and Mod Saw Shop. And now your host, respected wildlife biologist and outdoorsman, Randy Zarnke.
Hello, KFAR listeners. I hope you're having a good afternoon on this summer Saturday, and I further hope that we can make it even better with an enjoyable episode of Alaska Tracks. This is the program where we listen to excerpts from interviews I've recorded around the state with fishermen and hunting guides and pilots and trappers. I'm Randy Zarnke, and I'm the host of the program. Today's featured guest is Norm Phillips of Fairbanks. Norm is a gentleman in the truest sense of that word, a man I've always respected. Norm had a varied outdoor career, but he was best known as a trapper. He served the Alaska Trappers Association in many ways for many years. Let's go now and listen to the first segment of today's program.
How about any of the moose hunts that you did with your sons? Can you remember any one of those?
Well, I remember one real well up there. My two boys, Tom, and my oldest son, Norm Jr. The moose weren't so plentiful that year because somebody had come in there with the horses and had hunted it pretty heavy a guide. They just weren't that abundant, so we had to hunt a little harder. And up there, the hills, straight up and straight down. There's no hardly any flat country except on the ridges. Well, we hunted for a couple of days and finally called a moose, and it answered us, and it was down in kind of this draw. And we worked it up quite a ways, and then my oldest son shot it, and we went down and got it all cleaned up, and packing it out was a job. You straighten up, we have to get up to the airstrip. It was getting pretty tired by the time we got that thing packed out. So I told the boys, I said, now let's not shoot anymore. I said, that's plenty. We don't need any more than that. Well, Tom, my youngest son, I call him the outlaw. He's the hunter of the bunch. Anyway, he decided, well, he'd go down and get the horns because we'd left the horns down. He went down and they were kind of a fancy set of horns. One was kind of curved. It was at the base. It was kind of bent funny. So it was a different looking horn. And he decided to bring him out. Well, coming back out, he was scraping the horns on the brush. And naturally, you know what happens. Here's a moose right in front of him. So he don't know what to do. Should I shoot that moose? It's right there. About that time, an airplane come over and scared the moose, and the moose went down the hill. Tom said, oh, heck. And so he shot it right back down where we were before. So here we were. Spent another couple days packing moose.
Were the boys old enough to be of help?
Norm was. Tom wasn't too much help. He was only about 12 or so. He helped as much as he could. So he caught heck for a while, but it was fun.
The freezer was full that year.
Oh, my goodness. We ate that for 2 years. But the Alaska Range moose, that high mountain moose, there's nothing like it. I mean, you shoot one down here, it's good. But you shoot them up there, they're just sweet. I don't think I've ever got a bad moose from up there. Ron would share with me. I'd trade him salmon, and he'd give me moose. I never got bad moose. Getting back to these stories, started trapping up the Little Chena River, and my wife being native, we went ahead and filed on 160 acres up. We did that in 1965 under the old Homestead Act. We had to spend 5 years, she had to. I couldn't do anything. She had to do it all. Prove up on it. Had to trap on it, had to pick berries on it, had to do all these types of things, which everything was there. Well, she's doing this. I went on up the Little Chena River and up Anaconda Creek and cut trails and trapped. And it always was a pretty good trap line. Martin started coming back in the late 60s. I remember one thing that was really odd. I'd make a leaning pole set if I was in an area where there's marten and lynx. And I'd use that leaning pole as a toggle, a drag, for the lynx if I caught any. And I come along there and I had one of those set. And here's a mouse in the trap. It was a number one trap. It was hanging with all four legs stuck underneath the trap jaws, underneath, not on top. They were underneath, all 4 feet, little toothpicks. And I was trying to figure out how that thing got caught. The nearest thing I could think, I'd put my bait up here and I'd hang it out on a wire so it stuck out from the tree a ways. And it'd usually be pretty close to being right over the trap. So what I figured he did, he climbed the tree, walked out on that wire, got on the bait and fell off for some reason, or maybe the whole bait fell off because there was no bait left. And he fell on that trap and hit on his back, maybe, and bounced up and got caught in the jaws. That's the only thing I can figure. But that was really a funny thing. There was a lot of experiences like that up there. My wife would go with me whenever she could, and I was working during the daytime, so I was doing a lot of nighttime trapping, going to moonlight. So once a snow machine came out, where I could travel quite a ways, and I'd do that. Before that, we were down in Goldstream. I guess everybody's trapped Goldstream, you know, before people moved in there. And you'd walk it with snowshoes at night. You know, the old moon was like we've had lately, this nice bright moon. Mm-hmm. Beautiful. Every once in a while, you'd meet a moose. And if the snow was deep and they had a calf with them, they really didn't like you getting them off in that deep snow, so you usually had to walk around yourself, fighting the overflow a lot of times. One time, my wife and I were walking up Goldstream, and I come across this drag mark. There was getting to be a big clunk like this, and then I could see the other tracks just barely. It was really mushy and overflow. And apparently it was an animal, I thought, with a trap on its foot, and it was getting bigger and bigger. And sure enough, we come up there, and it wasn't where the bridge is today on Blaine Road there. Just a little above that, here was this lynx sitting there, just shivering. So I thought, well, he's in pretty bad shape. And I could look, and I seen this ball of ice on one foot, and I could see a double spring, just the ends of them sticking out from a double spring trap. And it wasn't my trap. I don't know whose it was. So I decided, oh, I'll just do this quick. There was nothing really around there to tie to or anything, so I just put the snare on his neck and tightened it up. Figured I'd do it that way. Well, that was pretty good. For just a minute there, he hung on it, you know, and I was pulling, and then he come loose. I mean, he got woke up. He was kind of in a shock state or something. I think he was freezing to death. And he came alive, and I really had a time. Because I didn't put a pole on it or anything. I just had it in my hand. So I was doing some fancy dodging, but pretty soon I got him. I didn't get damaged too badly. He hit me a couple times with that trap, but that wasn't too bad.
And the big holes in the overflow where, as he walked, he dunked that trap every time.
And he was dragging it, you know, he was trying to...
And then every time, and the ball would get bigger and
bigger. Get bigger and bigger. And of course, some would come off, but it was about that, you know, it was that size. Mm-hmm. I don't know what size that is. What is that, 10 inches?
Like a bowling ball.
Yeah, that poor thing was in pretty bad shape. Another time on a lynx, this was down near the road. I used to trap from about a mile from the road up, and that was really a good trap line for lynx. And nobody used it but me at that time. I come along, and I look over here, and here's this lynx. I didn't have a set there. And I look at him, and something's flashing on his foot. I got over there, and he was all tangled up in the brush, and he'd been caught with a number 1.5 coil spring. He'd been dragging it through the snow, and it was just shiny like a dollar. Just pretty. It wasn't my trap. I don't know whose it was. I never did find out. Lynx would cycle pretty good in those days where you'd have pretty good catches. And then the marten started coming back in, and that was pretty good. Oh, another time when I was really green and I had one of those leaning pole sets, there was hardly any snow that year. And we got up there and I saw wolf tracks all around, and this set was gone. Toggle was gone. So I was looking at it, and I saw rabbit tracks everywhere. There was hares everywhere. And I'd hear this noise every once in a while. I knew it was something somewhere out there. And I thought I was in the woods somewhere, and I couldn't see any tracks. And the wolves had messed up things. And then a wolf howled. You know how a wolf will get your scent and they'll howl? Well, one howled just below us. And he howled. And I thought, oh, man, what'd they do? Get something and drag it off? I couldn't see any sign. About that time, I got some sense in my head, and I just looked up the tree. And there was his lynx hanging way up the tree. He was hanging with a toggle. And I had a time getting him down, I'll tell you, because he was way up there. He'd climbed a long ways and then slipped or something and was just hanging from the toggle.
So you figured out what had happened?
Yeah, I figured out what had happened. He'd got caught. The wolves had scared him. And he'd climbed the tree.
And they were still hanging around. They thought they might get him eventually.
Oh, you betcha. Nice fat lynx would have been good. It looked like tracks of three wolves. I couldn't tell for sure, but only one howled. I had quite a time getting him down. I had to take a long pole and put a snare on it and get it around his neck and then pull like heck till he come down. I didn't have to chop the tree down. It's another experience I can tell you. I guess we call them adventures, huh? But anyway, we were going up to the cabin up in the Little Chena, and there was a set up there, and I was getting close to it, and I look up there, and here's a lynx laying there. So I thought, well, I got a lynx. Then I start looking, and I see the trap sitting here, and there's a fur ball in it. He was laying there alongside the trap, and he wasn't even caught. So I get my .22, you know, and I'm not really the greatest shot in the world with a .22, and I put it on him, figuring he's going to leave any minute or any second. And I shoot, and I miss. And he's just getting up and starting to look around like, you know, how they do when they want to get out of there. And I got him that time, got lucky. He was only caught by one toe. When he heard me coming, he'd pulled out of the trap, didn't know it, and just laid there. Weird. Another time I caught a wolverine. Couldn't figure out where he was at. I trailed him and trailed him and couldn't find anything. Just drags that it just disappeared. And this was out in a bunch of willows. There were no trees or anything, just willows. I couldn't figure out where he went. Well, maybe 50 yards back, gone through some trees. And I didn't find this out till later. He'd doubled back and he'd climbed one of these trees. And I was looking for him for hours. Never did find him. All winter long, I'm thinking about this. And it was pretty close to spring. I thought, I'm going to go look in those trees. I bet you that's where he was. And I went back, and sure enough, he was hanging there. I found his bones in the trap. The toggle had caught. So that was a lesson about wolverines. I think that was one of the first wolverines I ever caught. A lot of things happen like that. Like the trap I'm going to have today up on the Yukon River. The bears get in there in the summer, and they smell all that scent on those poles. You ought to see what they do with those poles. I have to really look for them sometimes, find them, or cut new ones, because they just chew on them. And you know, I think it's mostly a grizzly bear. That little cheetah line was always a pretty good line. It was close to town. I'd take my grandkids out there, or my boys would go with me. But I had one grandson that loved it. Yeah, I was going to make a trapper out of him, but it didn't work out that way.
So the proximity to town really made it a family affair.
It made it a family thing. We finally got a nice cabin built up there. It's still there today. I mean, I don't trap it anymore. Norm Peacebannon traps it now. I gave him the line. And I moved over to the Yukon and trap up there.
Whereabouts on the Yukon?
I trap the ridges above Hess Creek. There's another guy that traps the Hess Creek area. And I trap the ridges above it and all the way to my cabin. I got another cabin over on the Yukon. Right, and salmon fish in the summer. That's pretty nice. That's a different country than here, I'll tell you that. It's about 2,000 feet. The highest point is about 3,200. I don't go over that. I go around it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was burnt in the early 90s. Two different years it burnt. The wind will come in, and it always comes in from the northwest if it blows hard. North-northwest. And it'll blow, and wherever there's a tree, there'll be a snow burn. And boy, they can be terrible, and they're just very sharp and very hard. So if you haven't been in there for a week, and come back in there, and you have a heck of a time finding your trail if you don't know where it's at. So you're fighting that most of the time. And another thing that happens up there is the trees frost. And it's a frost, it builds up. And the wind can blow, and it don't blow the frost off. It'll blow it off right around the base of the trees because of the turmoil of the snow will knock that off. And if you don't check it about every 3 days, you'll come there and your bait is no good. It's just one big ball if you're hanging anything. It's just all frosted over. So you have to check it frequently up there. A lot of moisture. I guess it's from the river because it's only a hop, skip, and a jump, and you're right into the Yukon River.
Good stories from Norm Phillips of Fairbanks. We have to take a break here for a few words from our sponsors. Those sponsors keep us on the air. Thank them if you get the chance. Now back to our program with Norm Phillips of Fairbanks.
One time we were staying over there on the Yukon, my wife and I. My brother-in-law, Bud Fate, he has an airplane. And he comes in every once in a while to check on me. Well, one day it was about 20 below in town here. And he and my son-in-law, they decided they'll come over and bring me, my wife and I, chocolate cake. So here they come. And it was 46 below, if I remember right. Here he comes, flying in, you know. I didn't let him shut the airplane down, just keep it running because he'd have froze up real quick. He just dropped the cake off. It's supposed to be cake and ice cream, but they left the ice cream sitting in the seat of his pickup. But anyway, I remember that airplane taking off with those two guys and vapor trail, just like a jet. That same trip, I told my son-in-law, meet me up there at a certain date up where our trail ends. Well, what happened, a big snowstorm and a big windstorm come up just a few days before that. So we couldn't get back up our trail. I had no way of communicating with him because I didn't have a satellite phone or anything like that. So I thought, what are we going to do? I tried breaking the trail on it. It'd blow right back as fast as I'd break it out. 20 miles of trail. Couldn't keep it open. So we decided to come up the Yukon River. Well, I'd gone up and down the Yukon River before, but I'd never done it in December. And if you know the river, it freezes, most of it standing on edge. And when the snow comes and the wind blows, it just makes everything look flat. So we took off at 4 a.m. It was dark, naturally, in December. You know how it is, short days. We took off, my wife and I was in the lead. We tried to go to the side of the river. We couldn't. It was just overflow everywhere. Oh, boy. So we'd have to go out near the middle. And it was rough out there. I was upside down, sideways, and I was fighting that thing. It took us 10 hours to get 35 miles with no trail. Well, we got to the landing. Thank goodness at that time, they were open. I looked in my gas tank, and there was hardly anything left in it. My wife, she had over half a tank left because she was just following me. And Bill, he was waiting up there for me, and that's another 14 miles up the road. So we gassed up and jumped on and took off up there, and thank God he was still waiting. He didn't know what to do, but he had good old patience. He didn't think about coming to the landing because he was afraid to leave. Bad dilemma. So that taught me I never go back there without a phone of some sort, some kind of communications. That was a lesson.
What kind of a cabin do you have there?
We've got just a little 12 by 16 cabin. The bears get into it every once in a while, but they've done it twice. But we've had it there for 25 years, and the bears have only hurt it the last few years. I think it's bear-proofed. And then this fall, somebody goes in there and kicks in my door. Didn't steal anything but a lantern. I don't know what he was looking for. Maybe spark plugs or something for a boat or something. I don't know. So now I got a new door to put on.
That trap line in particular, but you know, your other trapping experiences, you're kind of known as the Martin expert.
Oh, Martin? Well, there's a lot of guys that are more Martin experts than I am. I've always been known as kind of a beaver man. I'll go back to the Martin here in a minute, but the reason I got to be the beaver man, because that was the money maker. If you made any money at all, it'd be on beaver. It was hard work, and I didn't mind hard work. It was 25 beaver to a license. Use a few licenses, like my wives and the boys, and you know, I could come out with 100 beaver. That was a good little income, because in those days, I had 40 acres of land out on Persinger Drive, out Badger Road. Cost me $8,000 and had a house and a garage on it. But the Martin, to me, Martin trapping is not an exact science, because that animal is unpredictable. Like I was just talking to Voorhees the other day, and he told me he couldn't get the Martin to climb his poles. He said he had plenty of Martin. Couldn't get him to climb the poles. If I can get it, what I really like is goose. I know salmon is good and beaver, but I really like his goose. This year I've got perfect goose bait and I'm not trapping. It makes me kind of mad, but it's really good if you get it just right and you use the skin and the feathers and then you have a good scent. You have to have skunk in it for Martin. I've tried others, but the best has a good skunk. And it seems to work even up there where the frost buries it real quick. And when I don't have good goose and I use fish, they'll climb, but not near as well.
And you use exclusively footholds on the end of pole sets?
I use footholds on pole sets. I might use a leaning pole if I'm getting down around Lynx Country. But I use mostly, well, just about all pole sets. Where I'm trapping, it's ridges, so they got their own crossings. You know, if you're down in the flats where you got all the black spruce, and you set a lot of sets. But up there, you have crossings. I've learned those. I can have 10 sets that maybe out of 25 sets, maybe those 10 will catch my Martin. The other are very intermittent. But if you're in lowland country, you probably will have to saturate it.
Now, these crossings that you refer to, it's a very specific travel routes that the Martin use?
They seem to have, yes. Up in the high country. It seems like they cross over certain places. Well, last year, just to show you, I only trapped about 8 miles, and I come out of there with 61 martins. And you know what the thing about that was? There was only about 7 females, and these are all nice males. That's the first time that's happened. My whole years of trapping martin. Don't ask me why, I don't know, but it was just that way. Now, I don't know what it's like up there this year. I haven't been up there. I understand some areas are good yet and some areas aren't. Martin are cycling down, I think, a little bit. Martin trapping is the most fun because there isn't much work in that. You're going out and you're setting a pole set and you're catching a Martin and he's easy to skin and he's a beautiful thing. Yeah, that's the fun. Wolves, that's a little different. From the little Chena, we were sitting there and we heard wolves howling. Well, we went around and we found this wolf kill. It was out on the peninsula, right on the little Chena. We'd set some traps and come back, and here was a wolf, black wolf. Set them again. There's another wolf. We ended up with 5 wolves out of 6. But what was really neat, there was one run of the bunch. you could tell by the track. It was a runt. And the last one to be caught was the big male. The night before, we heard the two howling. That little runt had a kind of a funny howl, and the old man, you could really hear that gruff old howl. And the next night, all we heard was that little runt. We didn't hear the big one. So the next morning, I jumped on the snow machine. Sure enough, we had the big, beautiful wolves. So we caught the whole pack, except that one. A couple of years ago, up at the cabin, Norm Jr. had gone up there and killed a moose, and the hide was up there. A little later, I set a couple of snares there for wolves. Caught a wolf there. And that's the best thing I ever did, because that was the skinniest wolf I ever seen in my life. He was terrible. He was starving. I don't know what happened to him. But I couldn't find any porcupine quills, but he was sad shape. We caught one wolf one time at the cabin, and we caught one way up on Sowell's Creek. And they were identical age, color, everything. They were both young male. That had to be the same pack. That isn't too far. That's what, 16, 17 miles. But we caught them that far apart, and they were just identical. Kind of fascinating. I wanted to get to this Trappers Association. In 1971, a guy by the name of Terry Johnson, he's dead now, he and I got together. And this is kind of funny, because we talked about this and talked about this. So finally, we called a meeting at the Fish and Game. Going to have a meeting on forming a Trappers Association. We got there, and we didn't have any idea what we were doing. We were talkers, not too much doers. People said, what are we going to do? Asked us all kinds of questions, and we kind of duh. Well, anyway, it ended up in 72, Terry and myself, Fabian Carey, Jay Vicure, the lawyer, he made up articles of incorporation, Ken Fanning, and several others, and we started the thing, got it done right. People come in that knew what to do, like Jay, and got everything going, got it started, and it's been going ever since. Kind of a nice thing. The guys like Ken Fanning, he did a lot. People like yourself and whatnot have kept that thing going. Pete Buse, another one, really got in there and did a good job. And that's one thing I'm real proud of. I know we had the idea, but I suppose other people had the same idea, but we had maybe kind of stupid, but at least we got it started and got the thing rolling. And we had a lot of support, like from Don Young and people like that. It's worked out pretty well. We were Interior Alaska Trappers Association, and then we decided to get big and go Alaska Trappers Association. And our plans were to try to branch out and have branches all over, but that didn't work out.
You held several offices over the years.
Oh, yeah. I was president, I don't know, two or three times, and secretary and stuff like that. But we've had some good people in there. Pete did a heck of a good job. You know, people like that have really kept that place going.
Any particular battles or successes that you can remember?
Well, the snaring of wolves and the snare issue itself. And the trappers fought that pretty hard. That was a big success. People were battling some pretty good battles.
Any of the other people that you care to talk about from back in the beginning?
Well, you know, if I could remember all their names. I remember their faces, but I have trouble with their names. There was a lot of them. I can remember Ken Fanning. Ken Dunsey was there. Pete Buist, Ron Long, myself, Terry Johnson, Fabian Carey. Now, Fabian Carey, I can tell you a story about him. He was our first president. We used him because he was kind of the hero of the trappers. He was the old trapper. He was kind of our image. He had this fabulous trap collection. And he had a lot of these stop-loss traps and these fancy traps. And he was showing us how to operate this one. And it was really a complicated trap, how you set it and everything. Well, during this procedure, he got his hand caught in there. And he didn't want to say anything. And I was watching him, and his face was getting redder and redder. He was trying to get his hand out of there. That was really funny. Finally got his hand out of there. He didn't want to let anybody know that it happened to him, because he was teaching us all about those traps. Another thing that happened to him is he lived up there in Grail, and I lived in Hamilton Acres. And these kids come up to my place and knock on the door. They had all these traps. And I look at them, there's all these old, odd collector's traps. I said, where do you get those traps? Well, they got scared. I knew who they were. And so I took them away from them and took them down to Fabian. And what they'd done, he had a shed back there. And they'd pulled some birds loose in the back of the shed, and they'd stole the traps out of there.
So they thought they were going to make a few bucks.
Oh, yeah. They were going to make a few
bucks. And it was his prized possessions.
Why, sure. And he had a lot of them, too. Nice mm-hmm. ones. Really different traps. But we all knew each other so well. Like when I moved to Aurora, some kids come in and stole fur out of my garage. The new guy in the block, I guess. Took it down and tried to sell it to Ron Long. He was buying fur then. Well, he knew whose fur it was right away because he knew how I skinned. Well, now that was one thing about Ron. He noticed stuff like that. He mm-hmm. So that was the end of those kids. They got caught.
That brings us to the end of today's program. I hope you've enjoyed listening to Norm Phillips of Fairbanks. If you like his stories, be sure to tune into Alaska Tracks again next week when Norm will share more of his memories.
You have been listening to Alaska Tracks, a blend of interviews, storytelling, and firsthand accounts from Alaskans who know the land and carry forward the traditions of this remarkable state. Alaska Tracks has been brought to you by Ginger Oram with Crown Real Estate, Interior Welding and Extreme North Trailers, Rod Saw Shop, and Frontier Outfitters and Century Hardware. Join us next Saturday for another episode of Alaska Tracks, about Alaskans, for Alaskans, by Alaskans.